The first reading comes from Acts, chapter 2, verse 14, and then 22 to 32. Then Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice and addressed the crowd. Fellow Jews and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. Men of Israel, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders and signs, which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. This man was handed over to you by God's set purpose and foreknowledge, and you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. David said about him, I saw the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand. I will not be shaken. Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will live in hope, because you will not abandon me to the grave, nor will you let your Holy One see decay. You have made known to me the paths of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence. Brothers, I can tell you confidently that the patriarch David died and was buried, and his tomb is here to this day. But he was a prophet and knew that God had promised him on oath that he would place one of his descendants on his throne. Seeing what was ahead, he spoke of the resurrection of the Christ, that he was not abandoned to the grave, nor did his body see decay. God has raised this Jesus to life, and we are all witnesses of the fact. So the gospel reading is from Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. This is the word of the Lord.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Bit of a cold morning. I'll try to be brief. I have to say, I smiled wryly to myself when I saw that Carl had put me down to talk on salt and light. That was a nice slide, wasn't it? That Paul put up. Because at the beginning of this year, I wrote into my journal this prayer, Lord, help me to be salt and light into this dark world. So God certainly has something to say to me and hopefully to all of us as well. I also felt a bit of an inner sigh, if I'm honest, because this is one of those passages that we probably know quite well. We may or may not have heard lots of sermons on it, but we certainly know that we're meant to be salt and light, and possibly, at least for me, feel either somewhat pressured to be doing that better, or something of a failure, that I'm not doing it as well as I should be, that we all know we should be salt and light, but we kind of wonder how well we're doing at it. So it set me about thinking, I wonder what Jesus meant for his original listeners to hear, because I don't think he ever wanted to make people feel ashamed and to put people under condemnation. So it set me thinking, what would they have heard, those original listeners? And as we've been going through the book of Matthew before Easter, we were looking through the Beatitudes, and again we were picturing the scene where Jesus saw these huge crowds coming towards him, hungry to hear from him. They'd heard about him, they'd seen his miracles, they were wanting to listen to him. And so he goes up this hillside and he sits down and he starts to teach them. And first of all, he goes through what's known as the Beatitudes, which we've been looking at, these values that he wanted to impart, that spoke about the things that were really dear to him. And then he goes on to expand that teaching. And this is the first thing that he then says, following on from the Beatitudes. So he's looking out at the crowds and he says to them, "You are the salt of the world. You are the light of the world." I wonder how they felt when they heard that, whether they kind of looked at each other. Who? Us? Because they undoubtedly were this ragtag bunch of people from all walks of life, a bit like us here this morning, gathered in front of him. And he's telling them not that they need to become the salt of the world, not that they need to be the light, but that they are. That they are the salt of the world, that they are the light of the world. So he's presenting them with this vision of their significance. It's not a giant ought, this is what you're supposed to be. It's not this kind of good ethic. It's a declaration to them of who they are. It's like an identity statement. This is you. So he's shaping the way that he wants them to think about themselves as they go about their business. And he's imbuing them with this tremendous dignity. We'll see in a minute what it meant to be salt and what light is. So he's imbuing them with dignity, with worth, with purpose. And if there is anything that this dark world of ours needs, it's people who know that they have dignity and worth and purpose. And the world in Jesus's time was certainly no darker than it is for us today. And those words for us are just as powerful. I wrote down somewhere in my journal, I can't quite know who to attribute it this to, but I wrote this: Jesus's words are meant to awaken us and to remind us of that which we carry in our bones, the living presence of God, the resurrected Christ. We carry him in our bones, and he bids us to be salt in this world in all our savoury particularity. So the way that you are salt is going to be different from the way that I am salt. So Jesus bids us to be salt in this world and to be light in the way that only we can blaze, the way that only you can blaze, the way that only I can blaze. There's this unique invitation. So a few things about salt. Apparently there is a New York Times best-selling book on the history of salt. It's written about 25 years ago. And it tells of how salt has shaped the story of civilization in all sorts of important ways. Back then, and in fact until about 100 years ago, salt was this incredibly precious commodity, one of the most sought after commodities in human history. Now, it's something we just buy from the supermarket and it costs a few pence and we all have it easily and readily available. But back then, salt was really, really valuable and expensive. So for the listeners of Jesus to hear themselves being called salt, that meant that imbued them with this preciousness, this worth. In fact, salt was so valuable in Jesus's time that Roman soldiers were often paid in salt rations. They got a special ration of salt as their pay. And the word salary comes from that. Sal in Spanish, salt in English, salary. And it's also why when we're talking about someone who's maybe not doing their job very well, we might say, oh, they're just not worth their salt. Do you know that expression? They're not worth their salt. because salt was a measure of worth. And of course, as we probably know, it has all sorts of uses. It can be used as a preservative in the days before fridges and electricity. It can be used as a fertilizer. It can be used as a treatment for cleansing wounds. So a few years ago when I had a horrible tooth extraction, my dentist didn't prescribe some special medicine. He just told me to wash my mouth out regularly with salt water. It has power for cleansing. Lots of parallels we can draw. And of course, salt doesn't exist for itself. It's not the main meal. We don't sit down to a bowl of salt. It's something that we add to our meal. If you like, the main meal is Jesus. And you don't need very much salt to add quite a lot of flavouring. So as salt of the world, we are valuable and we are useful. We have a purpose. Every single one of us has a unique purpose. And Jesus is inviting us into this understanding of ourselves as people with inherent usefulness, with a way that each one of us can contribute into society. And a few things about light. Again, it's such an important entity in our world, isn't it? Can you imagine a world without, well, there couldn't be a world without light. We know the power of it. And if you've ever been into one of those like mines or caves where they turn out the torches and you're in complete and utter darkness, then you know the difference that even just a small match lit can make into the darkness. A small flicker of light makes a tremendous difference in the deep darkness. Apparently, Charles Spurgeon, one of the great preachers, said this: "The Bible is not the light of the world. It's the light of the church. But the world doesn't read the Bible. The world reads Christians. You are the light of the world." That's who the world reads as we go out. So Jesus says in this passage we've been looking at that it's actually possible to lose our saltiness or to hide our light. And again, I was thinking about how does that happen? So historically, salt, particularly in that Dead Sea area where Jesus lived, was often mixed with other minerals. And when it was exposed to moisture, then the salt crystals would dissolve. And what was left was just this residue of worthless and tasteless other stuff that really wasn't worth anything. Like Jesus said, it was just thrown out and trampled underfoot. When it lost its saltiness in it, it was no longer good for anything. I'm sure there's lots of ways that we can kind of lose touch with our saltiness. But one of the things that I was thinking about, perhaps I recognise most for me, is that I think we lose our saltiness when we stop believing that we are salt. When the, if you like, the damp of doubt creeps in, when we stop believing that our lives can really count for something, when we stop believing that our lives matter, when we start getting caught up in thoughts around our own inadequacy or our own insignificance. And I know that's true for me. I can look at my life and think, well, what am I about? Does it count? What am I doing? What difference am I making? It actually always surprises me how many people do get plagued with those kind of thoughts about themselves, even people that you would think have made it. And I remember one author that I was reading, a successful doctor, psychiatrist, family man with kids and grandkids and several successfully published books, still wrote about struggling with his own sense of of inferiority and inadequacy and inner failure. I think we stop shining when we forget how infinitely loved we are, even in the midst of everything in our lives that might be unresolved, might still be messy and imperfect inside of us, the things we'd like to see changed. And I sometimes think, what greater light is there than a soul that knows its own imperfection, knows how marred it might still be, and yet dares to believe that it is fiercely and eternally loved? I think when we live true to that in the heart of our being, we cannot help but give light. It will emanate from us. It will bear witness to the presence of a God of love in this world, who loves even us in our imperfection. So how do we release our saltiness? How do we shine the light into this world? I kind of spent less time on this than in any other part of the sermon, because I think if we really got our worth and our purpose, then we would just do it. It would come out of us. When we truly understand the sacred worth of our lives and we're opened up to it, the unique contribution that each of us can make, we will make a difference. We will be difference makers. And I think there are so many ways that we can do that, as many ways as there are people, because it's about our unique contribution. It's not about perfection. It's not about performance. It's about participating, about showing up in the world as who we are. So we don't have to be perfect examples. We can get it wrong, and we can apologize, have the grace to ask forgiveness. And it's not about performance. It's not about doing great deeds and trying really hard to be good. Although I do think it is worth some serious prayer with God about what is mine to do. Lord, what do you want me to contribute to? How do you want me to participate in this world? So it might be about joining in some project, a bigger project, that helps bring life and light and healing and help into the world. There's some of those projects within our own parish, aren't there? Like the food bank and the poppy project, ways that we can participate, and other things beyond what's happening in the parish that we can become part of in society. But it might be about doing exactly what you're doing right now, but seeing it in a new light. I was saying at St. Mark's, I'm in my 60s now, and I became a Christian when I was in my 20s. So I have listened to a lot of sermons in that time, and there's not many of them that I particularly remember. Which put me in mind of the story, you might have heard this, of a preacher. One of his parishioners comes up to him and says, "Vicar, I've heard so many sermons from you over the years and I can't remember a single one of them." And the vicar replies, "Well, I imagine you've also eaten a good many roast dinners every Sunday, and I don't suppose there's many of those that you can remember either. But without doubt, they fed you and they sustained you on that day and kept you going. So perhaps the sermons we've heard over the years have done that for us. But there is one," all of which to say, there is one that I do remember from my early 20s, from a church I was going to in Birmingham. And the preacher was a guy called Nick Cuthbert. And he was talking on this passage, it was a series on the Beatitudes. And it was a Sunday morning service with a big congregation full of students and young people and all ages and so on. And he was talking about this very fact that we are salt and we are light. This is our identity as the people of God. And he recommended that when each of us went out into our different contexts from that Sunday morning, into our schools, into our workplaces, into our families, we said to ourselves, the light has come into this building. The light has arrived at the gym. I've been trying that recently. I don't feel like I'm much of a beacon of light in my gym as I sweat and puff and pant. But the light has come into the gym this morning. So you might like to try that. To think of yourselves in that different way, that you're bringing light into whatever context you're in. I think any way that we bring fun and joy into situations, then we're being salt and light. I think any way that we express appreciation for life, for each other. I have a sister-in-law who's just so good at that. She notices things and then she speaks about it. She expresses how beautiful something is, how lovely something is. I think every time we do that, we're being salt and light. Every time we choose hope over cynicism, any way that we care or love or are kind to people or make space to listen to them, we're being salt and we're being light. Any way that we bring creativity into this world, the musicians amongst us, the artists amongst us, I love that we have creative expressions in this church. Any way that we're bringing forth creativity into this world, I think it's salt and light. Any way that we practice hospitality, we invite people into our homes or we make a meal. Any way that we refrain from that slightly sarcastic, negative comment and instead choose to focus on something that's positive, genuinely so, I think we bring salt and light. So there are as many ways as there are people on earth of being salt and light. In the Message, there's a lovely version that says this. When we let our light shine, we uncover and reveal the beauty and glory of God. Sorry, no, that's the introduction. This is what the Message says. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colours in the world. The God colours in the world. Every time we do these small things, we're showing something of what God is like. And then to finish, just a quote that I found from someone called Clarissa Pinkola Estes. I'm afraid I have no idea who she is, but I liked what she wrote. Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help enormously. It is quite overwhelming, I think, in our world at the moment, and to know what's ours to do. But any small, calm thing, any way I reach out to those within my reach with a kind word, something that mends, something that brings lightness, it will help enormously. So let's pray. Jesus, you called us to be salt and light, and you told us that that's what we are. Help us to believe it. Help us to live true to this truth. And just in the silence, you might like to see if there's something God would want to show you. A small way or even a big way that he might be inviting you to participate, to contribute out of the unique person that you are. Let's just be quiet for a minute. Lord Jesus, thank you. Thank you for valuing us. Thank you for giving us purpose. We trust ourselves to you in your name. Amen.